Freakradio.org. We could always use your donations, however large or small, to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Make checks payable to FRSC. Mail to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Again, FRSC, P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061, or visit our website at freakradio.org. You can PayPal a donation there. Desperately need them. Also, any music and stuff you want to send us, P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Stay tuned. Keep it locked.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, yes, it's Bathrobs, Beers, Broadsides, April 24th, 2008. Number of people calling in, possibly a special report from Ontario, California, on the tent city and the proposed march to the county authorities there, and some updates from Santa Cruz. Stay tuned.
This town puts up decorations right around holiday time, then hands out lots of citations for people who ask for a dime. You cannot sit on the sidewalk, you cannot lean on the wall, you cannot stand in the doorway, you cannot be here at all. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. How people don't care anymore. Maybe this town's gotten colder. Maybe the people have changed. This town's concerned about hunger. If it's an ocean away, people don't mean to be heartless, but they don't know what to do. People don't mean to be homeless and such a bother to you. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. How people don't care anymore. Maybe this town's got the answer. Maybe they'll all go away if we just make it illegal to have no place you can stay. If we just make it illegal to be disabled or poor, maybe we finally won't have to think about them anymore. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. How people don't care anymore. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think.
That was Carol Denny from her earlier album, The Cruel Lullaby, a song I used to play a lot 5 or 6 years ago Ready for Christmas. Quite appropriate in Santa Cruz. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Name of the show is Bathrob Spears Broadsides, and I'm Robert North. It's a thing I usually do between 6 and 8 on Thursday evenings, and I'm glad if you're tuning in. I encourage you to call in, 427-3772, if you'd like to be a part of the show. If you have some comments, news flashes, thoughts, criticisms, additions, subtractions, and so forth. You can also reach the station on the alternate line, 469-3119. So either 427-3772 or 469-3119. If you want to catch me off air, it's the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Huff at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. You can leave me a message there, and sometimes you can actually catch me there. Hoping to have a couple of updates from folks who've gone to court. A guy named Warren West had a hearing before Judge Kangaroo Kelly, as I sometimes used to kind of jovially call him. I'm not so jovial these days about Kelly, and I'll be talking more about that case if and when Warren calls in, and perhaps even if he doesn't. Then there's the whole issue up on campus, the rather educational and successful protest that took place up there, day before yesterday, which told the recruiters for the military were told that they're not welcome on the campus. At least a number of us said that. And I was there recording the pros and the cons. There were a few people who were supportive of military recruiters on campus. Actually, people I knew from other kinds of activities. But they were didn't persuade me much. I didn't argue with them. I just let them state their point of view. And there was a lot of good satire, good theater. And there's a story on the whole thing on Santa Cruz Indie Media, Santa Cruz IMC, or Indie Bay Santa Cruz. The way you do that to find it is easily enough. You go to Santa Cruz Indie Bay, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, Google for it. And the top story is Students Against War Protest Military Recruiters at UCSC. And there's photos and info. And looks like Bradley has been there with his hungry camera, looks good. I did a lot of taping up there noon on Tuesday or thereabouts. I thought it was going to be more difficult to park than it was. I was pleasantly surprised. But I don't have that tape with me at the moment. At least I've been looking for it, and I had it 20 minutes ago, but I don't seem to have it with me now. It's the case of the disappearing tapes again. But I'm hoping I'll find it, and if I don't, on Sunday I hopefully will have it at that time. This show is also a morning show, a longer morning show on Sunday from 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon, even earlier sometimes if I get up and make it in to chat with Thomas Levitt, who does the wake-up call right before my show. And, of course, the name of the show, again, is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm Bathrob Spear, for those of you who might not know, the point being that many of us are concerned about the sleeping ban law and other laws that criminalize the homeless in Santa Cruz. What is the sleeping ban law? It's a municipal code that was established many years ago by the Santa Cruz City Council at the urging of the police department, establishing probably one of the most draconian, harshest anti-homeless sleeping bans in the state, if not the country, at least in terms of the wording of the law. The sleeping ban in Santa Cruz makes it illegal to fall asleep or be asleep or sleep after the hour of 11 until 8:30 in the morning. And it also makes it covering up with blankets during the same period criminal, and putting up a tent of protective covering at any time, 24 hours a day, is also a crime. And in a town where there's space tonight for 60 people, and there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city limits, well, it puts people in an untenable situation. It makes them criminals. And while it's said often that the police don't enforce this law vigorously, they do give out 60 to 80 tickets a month, or have been, I'm told, from battle-ready Bob Patton, who's a member of the Human Rights Organization, that there has been an upsurge in tickets, a surge, so to speak, in Santa Cruz, of citations for the crime of sleeping at night for those who have no shelter by the Santa Cruz Police Department. And, I try to be an equal opportunity blamer. I blame the police department. I blame the city council. I blame the Parks and Rec Department, whose chief ranger, John Wallace, delights in going around destroying campsites and seizing homeless property and trashing it, not even giving people a chance to pick it up out of storage, unless his policy has changed since he told me about it a couple months ago. And it's something we're working on changing. The sleeping ban itself has been successfully overturned in several jurisdictions in California through the federal courts, in part. So, for instance, in Los Angeles, the Jones settlement, following the Jones decision by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, persuaded or pressured the LAPD, city attorney, city council down there to make it legal, not illegal, but legal to sleep at night between the hours of 9, I think it's in 6, 9 and 6 or 6:30, provided you're 10 feet away from a building, provided that there haven't been 1,250 units of supportive housing built. They're supposed to build that housing when that is built, and the settlement will be suspended, according to the brilliant minds of the ACLU who cooked up this compromise, which I don't agree with, but which is what's enforced. But anyway, in L.A., they've suspended the sleeping ban. San Diego, under the Spencer decision, that was the case, the Spencer case, after L.A. was told you can't arrest people for sleeping, the two to one decision by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said you can't do it, and L.A. settled. Before L.A. settled, San Diego settled, and I think they have an even broader right to sleep. I think it's 24 hours a day on public property, provided they're not violating other laws. Now, I've got to be still trying to get clarity on the San Diego settlement, but it's similar to the Los Angeles settlement. In Richmond, California, and I'm repeating what a lot of people already know who listen to this broadcast, but it's useful for those who don't, the actual Richmond City Council decided a year ago, hearing from advocates like Susan Prather and others, and attorneys, that it wouldn't be productive or legally proper, or it would make them vulnerable to lawsuits if they criminalize people from sleeping when they had no shelter for them. So they said you can't ticket people unless you have shelter for them, at least you offer it, and they can't, you know, if shelter is not available, you can't ticket someone for sleeping. That's part of the Richmond law. In Fresno, there are 10 cities that have been established. New Jack City, it's called. Another one is called The Hill. These are homeless encampments under underpasses, which formed after the famous Kincaid decision, which we've talked about. The Kincaid decision held that you can't seize homeless property without holding it for a period of time so homeless people can reclaim it. And apparently in apprehension about the Jones precedent, although it's not really a precedent anymore in the same way that it was, because there was a settlement, and the settlement kind of removed it. It vacated the decision as a precedent, though it didn't depublish it. And if anyone can explain that to me, hey, come into the studio and let's chat. Actually, it means that you can argue that they did it in L.A. and they did it in San Diego and they did it in, at least those two cities, and therefore courts should do it again. And that's what we're going to be arguing. We're having a pizza party this Saturday, which is where the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and the Human Rights Organization. I mentioned Battle Ready Bob a moment ago. He's part of that organization, as is Bashful Bernard Klitzner and a number of other folks. Going to be having a get-together of the plaintiffs, that is to say, homeless people in Santa Cruz who have been cited, ticketed, harassed for sleeping by Ranger Wallace or other police officers, and or other rangers, and who have, you know, had no legal place to go, and therefore it shouldn't have happened. There should be some recompense for it. There should be a court order that stops it from happening in the future. In essence, we're asking the federal court in San Jose to do what the court in Los Angeles did after being told to do so by the Ninth Circuit, the higher court, which is to say direct the authorities not to arrest people after 9 o'clock at night or during the evening, and to allow them to be able to sleep, given the fact that they don't have legal places to go, provided they're not violating other laws, public health and safety codes of other sorts, provided they're not blocking the sidewalk, urinating in the street, breaking windows, spraying everybody with LBAM ground spray for moths, or who knows what else, provided they're engaging in, you know, ordinary sleepy behavior. then we think that's a better solution than methamphetamines at night, keeping them awake at night, which would, of course, comply with the city council's law to keep them awake all night. But that's, of course, crazy. And while I think our city council is wild and crazy, I think that's one place we just don't want to go with them. So Saturday around 12:30, we're going to be having a pizza party get-together with plaintiffs. We're going to sign the final contracts, and hopefully the lawsuit will be filed within the next month or two. I mean, that's what it's beginning to look like. I mean, that's I can only, you know, I'm hobbled by the attorneys, and there are was one attorney in Santa Cruz, Kate Wells, another in Berkeley, David Beauvais, three on the East Coast who are connected with the firm of Jenner and Block, I believe it's called. I probably have that name wrong. And then there's one attorney with the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, Tulin Osdigger, who's been kind of liaisoning with us for a long time. And so we have some legal power there. And if you have been ticketed, or you have friends who have been ticketed, or you want to be of assistance in stopping the criminalization of the homeless in Santa Cruz, you know, the liberal Santa Cruz, but unfortunately not quite as liberal as Los Angeles, San Diego, Fresno, or Richmond, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can be a part of it, and you can be a supporter of it. We can give you some jobs to do, tasks to do. We can, you know, perhaps line you up as a supporter or an endorser. You can also call in to this particular show here, 427-3772, and you can talk about it. Perhaps you think the sleeping ban is a good thing, or a necessary thing, or a useful tool in the police officer's box, or something that poor Mayor Ryan Coonerty shouldn't be blamed for because he didn't write it after all. He just supports it, that's all. He may have written the law that makes it illegal to linger in a parking lot or garage. He may have supported banning activists, or actually personally banned activists who were protesting his mayoral activities outside the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which he either is or was the manager of, but he didn't write the sleeping ban, he just supports it. Anyway, here's a call from, well, we'll find out. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, I was just calling to talk with Mr. Norris to point something out.
Sure. Let me put you on to Mr. Norris. Hi, this is Mr. Norris.
Hello.
Hi, what's your name, caller?
I'm Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hi, good evening. Enjoy your conversations, and I think you open up a lot of minds. I was wondering if you could comment in regarding these issues as to the meaning of the word public, because I guess what we're talking about is sleeping bans in what is known as public spaces. Would that be kind of accurate?
Well, actually, that's one of the reasons the sleeping ban is so unique in Santa Cruz. It does, and we are talking about the whole ban. The ban not only bans sleeping in public, it bans sleeping on private property unless you are inside a house or hotel or domicile, as they call it. So you can't sleep inside a church. You can't sleep inside a restaurant. You can't sleep inside a movie theater. You can't sleep inside an office building. All these things are actually illegal under the sleeping ban. Now, admittedly, that's rarely enforced, but it indeed is part of the wording of the ban. What's mostly enforced is the cops and rangers beat the bushes out in the Poganip and in the parks and in places where people have to and customarily do sleep who have no legal place to go.
Would those spaces that you're referring to be kind of known in slang terms at least as public? Or?
Yes, I would say so.
Well, look, because this is where it comes to be interesting to me, and I was wondering if you could comment on it. I looked up public, and it's got two contradictory definitions. One of them says open to all persons, and the other definition says owned by a community. And the reason I say it's contradictory is because the instant you say that it's owned by somebody, you're implying the right to exclude other people.
Right, although, you know, the community, when a community owns something, there's kind of the inference that the community should have access to it, though admittedly they can just, you know, set up their own rules and their own caretakers and their own gatekeepers and that sort of thing.
Right, which kind of is in opposition to open to all people.
Right. I mean, remember, though, that words can have contradictory meanings at the same time. I mean, cleave means to split in half, and it also means to cling. You know, I mean, English is a strange language, so I think the important thing is not so much or it's kind of curious and interesting that words have different meanings, but what's really important is the kind of meanings that are enforced and the laws where those words are used. And public here is used, of course, to mean, I mean, it's essentially meant to cover everything, public and private. It does, there's no distinction, really, in the sleeping ban, except that if you're in a house or hotel, or if you're in an area where you have a permit, which the city council and the Parks and Rec never gives, by the way, or very, very rarely, I think half a dozen times in the last decade or two, you know. So it's not really terribly pertinent to this issue, but, you know, I understand that's kind of an interesting distinction between...
I just feel that it's at the heart of the whole controversy,
okay.
Which is that basically you're talking about who has control of a certain resource.
Uh-huh.
And who allows someone else to use that resource. So essentially, in this country, there is no public space because someone eventually controls it.
Well, it is true, though, that, I mean, it used to be in the 1800s that you had no right, for example, to speak in a public park. The First Amendment didn't apply unless you were protected under state legislation. This is an interesting historical fact. I mean, in the 1890s, a preacher on the Boston Commons said, look, I'm talking in public space. It's a public forum. Why can't I give a speech? And the answer is no. The police can decide when you can speak there because it's, as you say, community-owned, and the police is appointed by the community. However, you know, as time went on, when the Supreme Court began considering these issues around, well, it was actually around World War I and dissent and, you know, state anti-sedition laws, they decided that there was a basic substantive right that all the states and communities have to respect, which is the right to have access to public spaces that are public and to be able to, for example, use the public spaces, even though the claim that this has been done from time immemorial isn't really true, unless you have a lot of people who are demanding it and forcing that to happen, like when labor unions get out there and masses of working people get out there and demand their rights, when women get out there to demand their rights, when different groups of people demand their rights, then, you know, that becomes active again. But I think that, you know, the fact that the space is nominally owned by the community no longer means that the community can ban people from it with impunity, particularly, for example, sidewalks. I mean, Ryan Coonerty has been successfully banned people, Mayor Coonerty, from all parking lots and garages, unless they're parking a vehicle. Although we've taken back the parking lot at parking lot number 4, which is the one next to the farmer's market, and the police are ignoring it because they don't want to ticket people there because it would cause, I presume, too much consternation. But the fact is that you have a right. I mean, you know, Coonerty can't, I suppose in theory, he could try to say, we don't want you to loiter on the sidewalks, but the Supreme Court has found that loitering laws generally are unconstitutional. I mean, you can't have
right. So, which brings up this kind of, and I'm talking in more philosophical and practical terms when I talk about the difference between ownership and public and private, but
right.
Also brings up the idea of what a right is, which is basically, a right really isn't anything. It's whether you have the power
sure.
to do something or not.
Although there is a sense in which if the community recognizes a right, that becomes a kind of a form of power.
Mm.
In other words, even if you don't have a gun with you, even if you don't have 100 people on your side, if people have, you know, come to understand that, yeah, it's the right of that wild and crazy fundamentalist Christian preacher or that crazy guy who doesn't like the sleeping ban to rant and rave, you know, then they'll let it happen even if they don't like it. You know, I mean, they'll let it go on. And not because they haven't got the power in theory to shut it down, but because, you know, they feel that somehow it's justified by, you know, that if we shut him down today, then they'll shut us down tomorrow, I guess, is one of the theories.
Well, thank you very much for the show and your reflection.
Sure. I don't want to catch you sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, okay?
All right, then.
Thanks, Mike. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. And let's turn to another Carol Denny song. This one you haven't heard before, probably, unless you've been going to her concerts.
PG&E needs your money so bad, even though you gave them all that you had. Your little check doesn't go very far when you buy check and shut up. If you're confused, we can open your eyes. Come to McDonald's and pick up some fries. Pick up a placemat and read till your eyes cross, 'cause Governor Davis has got some advice for you. Turn down your thermostat, shut off your lights, and put on some more socks and shut up. Your little check is a joke, don't you know? We need $8 billion before we pass go. We gotta make profits, it's like a disease. We're the landlords for Wall Street, for oil companies. They want you to be quiet and suck down the sleeves, so that we can get rich and keep you on your knees. Get a clue, write the check and shut up. If you didn't cash your stock options in time, don't come to us with your bitching and crying. Our parent company's doing just fine. We're tired of the way all you ratepayers whine, and you'll send all your money to us over time. So get used to it, oh, and shut up. PG&E is your friend.
That was another song from The Cruel Lullaby, and the name of it is PG&E Song, or Write the Check and Shut Up. It's by Carol Denny. If you want to check out her music, you can go to www.caroldenny, D-E-N-N-E-Y, all one word, Carol Denny, all small letters, .com. And by the way, if you're interested in more discussion and more analysis, a lot of the articles are somewhat older, but unfortunately the situation hasn't changed a lot. Stuff around homeless civil rights or the lack thereof in Santa Cruz, go to the Huff website, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at www.huffsantacruz.org. And we are preparing a new website, compliments of Tenderfoot Tim Rumford, and you can actually check out this website as it's getting created by going to the old website. There's a link to it there, as well as a link to all the old stories from Santa Cruz, about Santa Cruz, and by Santa Cruz writers about other places that were published in the homeless monthly newspaper, Street Spirit. So that's really quite something. It took me several years to get this together and a lot of help from a lot of people. Hats off to all of them. It's still in the process of being put in clear form on the website, but actually the articles are pretty chronologically arranged. They're searchable. They're three different forms: JPEG, RTF, and there's a third form, PDF, I think it is. And all you got to do again is go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and click under Street Spirit, and you'll find some of the old Street Spirit, all the old Street Spirit articles about Santa Cruz. Actually, we have more than the Street Spirit website itself, which, while a great website, is kind of been, has not been kept up as it could have been. There are a lot of good websites that homeless newspapers have set up. One of them is the Austin Advocate. You may remember, those of you who listen to the show regularly, a guy called Richard Troxell from Austin was on. If you Google for Austin Advocate, you'll catch a lot of his back issues. Very interesting. Austin overturned its sleeping ban in 2000. And he talked about that on the show. Austin, Texas doesn't have a sleeping ban. anymore, at least not for the whole city. In the downtown area, there's a sleeping ban, but no longer is there a citywide sleeping ban. And again, newspapers, very interesting sort of to follow the point of view of advocates, homeless people, and those who are at the ground level taking the shit from the cops and from the authorities, and also fighting back. Other newspapers that I encourage you to check out, Street Roots from Portland, Oregon. They have a good website. They've been going strong. They hoped actually to set up Dignity Village, one of the first, and I guess perhaps one of the longest-lasting homeless-run encampments, a tent city called Dignity Village, which is still going, last I heard. Up in Seattle, there's a newspaper called Real Change, I believe it is. And there's also a tent city up there, Tent City 4. Down here, we may be hearing from activist David Bush from Ontario, California's tent city called New Hope City. They were under, well, they have been under significant pressure from the police. Not just pressure, half the city has been terrorized or intimidated or pressured into leaving. This is a tent city that was set up in Ontario, California, a little city on the borderline between San Bernardino and L.A. counties near the, not sure if it's the San Bernardino or the L.A. airport, but one of those airports. And it's, we had a couple of activists from People Helping Children, Helping People, I think it was called. I may have that acronym wrong. Christine and Ron Taylor were on the show here a couple weeks ago, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, visiting this tent city down in Ontario, California. And David Bush, an activist from the Los Angeles area, very articulate guy, very courageous, broad-ranging in his interests. I hope we can have him on. And I do have a tape I'll be playing of his on Sunday when I get back. Hopefully when I come back to the show on Sunday and actually remember to have the right bag with me at the time, we'll be playing that tape, as well as some more stuff from the recruiting satire, demonstration, confrontation, and so forth that happened up on campus at UCSC on Tuesday. A lot of good stuff. The Street Spirit itself does have a website, www.thestreetspirit.org, which has not been kept up because I think the editor has been under the weather and had a number of responsibilities he's had to struggle with, family problems, family health concerns, and so forth. But good paper, although it unfortunately is it's got some censorship problems because of its affiliation with the American Friends Service Committee, and one of our best writers, Becky Johnson, has been censored by the paper and actually banned, and which is really too bad. She just wrote a great article about the Jason Pascal case, which some of you have been following the show or aware of, an African-American tarot card reader who has faced persistent, massive harassment on the streets from the police department, in the courts, from judicial authorities and public pretenders and so forth, and who fought the system to a standstill. Charges were dismissed, and who knows, maybe back in town to do some more tarot card reading. Becky wrote a great article about that, and hopefully it'll be published soon on the Huff website, if it isn't already up there. In fact, maybe I'll check to see if that's happening. Again, the Huff website is www.huffsantacruz.org. Let's see if anything has actually been posted on that website. I suspect not. We're really still struggling with this. There's interesting stuff on the website, but it's nothing new in terms of articles. There's also a blog on the website. So let's see here. There is a new... Yeah, it has been posted on the website. Freedom Man by Becky Johnson is posted on the Huff website. You go first to huffsantacruz.org, and then you click on the first the new reorganized website, or you can go to it directly by going to huffsantacruz.blogspot.com. And it's a good story. All charges dropped against tarot card reader, street entertainer, Jason Pascal, and that's up there. Plus, there's a sleeping band lawsuit update, some videos from the parking lot panic law, the successful move by the drummers, the Trash Orchestra, and Huff and other groups to take back the public space, community space, if you will. Should be open to the public, and because it is a community space, it should be back in the hands of the community and out of the hands of the bureaucrats and the politicians. I'm going to try to reach Warren West, who's an individual who is facing the same kind of problems Jason Pascal is facing. I'm going to see if I actually can reach him on the phone. Let's see if we can get through to him here. Judge Tom Kelly. Hey, Warren West. Hey, you want to talk on free radio? Would you like that? I know. You're live now if you want to be. Hang on. Okay, can you hear me, Warren?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you not only can you hear me, but the rest of the world can hear you, too, if they're listening.
Oh,
hey, Warren. So, hey, what's cooking? You went to court, I guess, a couple days ago, and then again you went to a psychologist, a shrink session today. Is that the story? Or?
Oh, I got it. They gave me a quick draw off the bottom of the deck to go see another shrink tomorrow. So I can't do any appeals or even get my transcript or anything. And
well, let's go back so people know what's happened, because I haven't really talked about your case except to say that similar to the case of Jason Pascal, where he too was told you either cop a plea. Jason called the police when somebody called him a nigger and spat on him, and he, when the police came, they arrested him for having called somebody else a pussy, or said, you know, back off, you pussy, or something, when the guy came too close to him. This was a second incident. Anyway, Pascal was jerked around for 8 or 9 months or longer, and he was told, well, if you'll, he wanted a jury trial. Tom Kelly told him, I won't give you a jury trial, and unless you agree to cop a plea, I'm going to have a competency hearing for you.
Yeah, well, that's where I'm at on a misdemeanor battery, except the attorney, the public defender, I think, ordered my competency hearing. But I'm
The public defender can't order it, but she could advise Kelly. That's what she wanted. I know you had some.
Yeah.
You like Jason had difficulties with your public. I call them public pretenders sometimes because.
Yeah. She only made two statements. The first 7 months, all she said was, don't say anything, I'll talk to the judges. And then the second statement she said was, I can't win. The evidence of the witness discredit the pictures. And I thought that's a pretty nut statement.
So let's go back to talk. I mean, first of all, understand, before you say anything on the air, you should be advised that in practice, if the police department or the DA wants to, you know, this gets archived. This show is archived at huffsantacruz.org. Anybody can download it.
Yeah.
So if you don't want anything you're saying said in court, you shouldn't say it on the air.
Right.
But if you do, then go ahead and say it, because this
right.
is the opportunity
well,
for the community to hear about it.
It just backed the transcripts. I used to be a court reporter myself, and so I got a pretty good mind at retention, and I just report, and basically that's all I'm doing. Is just
what exactly? When? Where? Warren, where were you a court reporter?
On Butte, Montana.
Huh. So how long you been in Santa Cruz?
I've been retired here since 1995.
And what kind of work did you do before you retired?
I was an electrician, journeyman electrician.
And have you...
And other things.
Sorry?
And a lot of other things. I was a truck driver and journeyman electrician.
Uh-huh.
Worked as a pit boss in a casino for a while.
And so when you came to Santa Cruz in 1995...
Yeah.
And I know we've seen each other around town. You've been a supporter of ending the sleeping ban. The most recent incident of which brought you to court... You want to tell us what went down with that?
Well, not really, other than it's just a misdemeanor battery in Santa Cruz, because the names and the people and myself are still pending in court, and I'm sure they wouldn't want me to get on the details of the court. However, I will go as far to say it: these mental competency proceedings against me are just a ruse, so they don't, so they won't have give me a jury trial.
Well, you don't sound incompetent. Are you babbling? And are you? Are you picking your nose? And
no,
actually,
I'm
nose.
I'm real excited because I've just got a clearance, and I'm looking for a bigger house to move to. I'm shopping and diligently moving, trying to move. So I'm.
Well,
my next court thing is after I see the order to shrink tomorrow. Then my next court date, I think, is next month. Mid-month next month. I'll check the date. So I have a month after tomorrow to do my own thing.
Your own research and interviewing of witnesses and so forth.
Well, you know, I'm trying not to let this ruin my life and dominate it.
Right.
But, you know, and I don't want to. I know it's their job, and they can harass me for 11 months, but they get a paycheck for it. And I have other interests than just trying to pound lies up people and make other people's lives miserable. I have a good friends and a good life, and I don't want to get tangled up in the court system.
Well, they're offering you a plea, Warren. If you have to cop a plea, you know.
The plea was due one hour of counseling and plead guilty. Well, I'm not going to plead guilty to something I just flat didn't do. In fact, I even told them that I want a lawsuit and some money out of this for false arrest and the other behaviors.
Would it be fair without mentioning where this happened? Is it fair? Is it okay if I describe the general circumstances of, you know, what went down? And we don't have to say the exact details, but would that be okay? Would that be all right to say that?
Well, yeah, it's just a misdemeanor battery that I didn't commit, and I'm not going to plead guilty to something I didn't commit.
Well, what you told me was you were passing by one of the local bars, walking by on the sidewalk, and you stopped to get your cigarette lit. Is that accurate?
I'd rather not comment on it, on any of that right now, Robert.
Okay, well, we'll leave it then. I mean, I'll respect that. They'll be advised, you know, if somebody wanted to find out about this, they could go check out the court records. At least they could find out what you were. I don't think they could see the police report. So I think actually, right, you're, unless people talk to you directly or.
Well, I figure it's my American duty to risk my competency to get a jury trial. This blind judge, I have picture proof evidence that I didn't do anything, the crimes that they say I did, and rather than rule me not guilty on it, they're going to try to have me committed as not being competent for trial.
Well, I guess they're not going to try to have you committed, that they will try to have you ruled incompetent.
Right.
And also they've refused to allow you the right to fire your own attorney, right? To fire the attorney and choose an attorney you want.
Well, he has an order. I put a margin in the report, and I've told her to sit down numerous times, but she gets up behind my back and starts babbling. So,
you had an appointed public defender who you wanted to be separated from, and Judge Kelly specifically refused to do that.
Yeah, right? I've asked, 10, 12 times.
I guess his face
and multiple times.
And is his claim the reason he won't do this is because he thinks you're too incompetent to find your own attorney, or?
Well, the paper I saw said that the Sophia Fat initiated my competency.
No, but is the reason? Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
The question I had for you, Warren, was is the reason that Kelly will not let you dump this attorney you don't like, Miss Fat, I guess her name is.
Well,
Phat.
They're all cronies.
Wait a minute. Is the reason? Let me finish the sentence. Is the reason that Kelly won't let you dump this attorney is because he doesn't think you're competent? Is that what he said to you?
He hasn't gave me a reason why he won't fire my attorney.
Because we know that in the case of Jason Pascal, at least this is by his account, that he tried to get his public defender to disqualify Kelly. And because Kelly had said to him, you can either plead guilty or no contest to this charge, and we'll reduce it somewhat, we'll put you through a competency hearing if you want to go to trial. Because and what happened was Pascal contacted a friend of his in Southern California, who was an attorney, who told him this is completely wrong. A judge can't do this.
Yeah.
And so the attorney friend called the public defender of Pascal, who had refused to do anything about it, and the public defender finally was forced to do something about it, and Kelly was disqualified from the case, and it was moved to somebody else's court.
That's what I want. A month ago, my
and the case was dismissed immediately after that.
Well,
so that may happen with you too. So.
A month ago, the attorney had me brought in on the wrong date, and the judge had me arrested and then manacled on the side. And she telling the judge that I'm glaring at the audience when actually I'm wincing in pain because I don't have my asthma inhaler. She's been devious and things like that. She didn't tell. She had never relayed any messages to the court. What the outcome of my last competency hearing was, I had to ask the judge direct. And between them, I don't know. They're not bound to tell the truth.
So you're not getting the information you want from your public defender, in other words?
I'm getting zero from her. She's a big absolute zero. The last thing she said to me was, I can't win. The evidence of the witnesses discredit.
And how many times? How many times have you met with her?
25 times I had to go to court so far.
25 times? That's a lot. Are you sure you're not exaggerating? That's a lot of times,
no,
even in a year.
Two out of the three times, it's the wrong court date, or they don't have their two out of three courts don't pan out. They're a no show. Just like two out of three doctors they sent me to have been a no show.
Well, you've only been sent to two doctors so far, right?
They sent me to. They made appointments for three in the last 3 months, and two out of the three were no-shows. So they're making me another appointment with a third one that was a no-show.
So the psychiatrist or psychologist didn't show up for the appointment?
Didn't show up for the appointment.
Well, I did hear in court yesterday.
Hold it.
Warren, hang on a second. I did hear in court yesterday that the public defender actually acknowledged that you waited for 20 minutes for the doctor to show, and the doctor didn't show. So she confirmed that you're not just making this up.
A month ago, I was in court, and the judge said I had a choice of when I was manacled and couldn't talk. He said I had a choice to choose between 12 psychiatrists. But now they've just dealt me two psychiatrists off the bottom of the deck. Apparently, I don't even get that choice. I asked him, and he said, "Well, you can either go to jail or you can see the psychiatrist on the 25th."
You know, it's interesting. It brings back to mind what Kelly did to Robert Flory about 15 or 20 years ago. He was an activist protesting at the town clock, taking many, many sleeping ban tickets. And he, you know, he was contesting them in court. He was fighting, and he was going to the law library. And what Kelly did was he put him in jail in what I thought was a blatantly illegal move to pressure him to, essentially cop a plea. And he didn't cop a plea, but he did get him to leave to abandon his political protest at the town clock. Judges, on a number of occasions, Kelly included, and frankly, I like Kelly personally. I mean, he's a nice guy. I've talked to him. Not recently, but we used to be, you know, we're on friendly terms. We were at the memorial for Richard Quigley together, and, he's...
just a yes judge.
Well, the problem is people, when they don these judicial robes, when they don the politicians sit in their chairs, and when they, put on their guns and their tasers and so forth, they become a different animal. It's kind of sad.
Well, I look at it that he's trying to break me in. They haven't been able to do it in the last 11 months. And if they take my competency for a while, I'll get it back, and then we'll be back to square one. And eventually, I presume I will get my day in court.
Well, you don't sound incompetent. I mean, and you don't really sound uneducated. I mean, I got to admit, your motions to court look a little rough when you showed me your handwritten motions. But you are. You said you have had some college training.
Well, yeah, I've had sophomore geology and mineralogy. I took a semester of corporate law.
Huh. So keep in touch. I mean, I would encourage you to take someone with you when you go to your psychologist appointment as a witness, as someone to record.
I'm having a friend go with me, and
very good.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell them now after they've dealt me the two scourge off the bottom of the deck. I'm just ready to plead the fifth, because anything I say will be used against me.
Well, you know, it's in a way, I think that might be appropriate. You might, you know, apologize to the psychologist and tell him you don't mean to be, you know, to appear crazy or schizophrenic or incompetent, but you're concerned that, you know, you apparently were found incompetent by another psychologist. Your own public defender won't show you the report. The judge won't show you the report. You know, you don't know what's going to be held against you and what's not. This is a whole new area for me is how do you defend against a judge who starts sending people to competency hearings when they're simply asking for a jury trial? I mean, it's kind of strange. That's all.
Yeah, I'm sending copies to judiciary reviews and to the Bar Association.
You mean the Commission on Judicial Performance?
Yes. And so they may be, you know, there may be a turnaround in the near future. I'm hoping. Because they think I can't record or I'll just take lumps and go away, and it's not going to be like that. I'm going to go down doing every legal thing I can to preserve my competence and have my day in court.
Well, I appreciate that, Warren. I also appreciate the fact that you know, you're trying to continue with your life and not let this, you know. Because all these people are paid to engage in these activities. The judge gets
right.
A hefty salary. The public pretender gets money. You know, the psychologist who will be seeing you tomorrow gets money. But you don't get shit, frankly.
No,
you get a lot of shit. But,
and
you
then
know.
Best I can do is try to blot it out of my mind for the next 20 or so days until a couple days before. And of course, do my legal briefs too, send them off.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, research the issue around competency. Find out what your rights are there, because apparently you're not getting terribly good advice from your public defender.
I haven't found any mental health competency that will stand up for the disabled, or just like I haven't found any environmental agencies that will stand up for the environment in Santa Cruz. I think both of those people all those organizations are a fraud. If they were accountable for the people that they've actually done service to, they would be out of business.
You know, I tend to be sympathetic to that point of view, Warren.
I know a lot of people are in Santa Cruz. I'm asking for a grand jury investigation from Patricia Trumbull for having the same people locking up downtown public bathrooms for nighttime citizens are enabling disabled people to scoop up the human excrement in the morning time. And both these are principles by our government, to me, are offensive.
You're talking about the kind of the group that goes around and cleans the sidewalks? So that's
yeah.
The disabled, the kind of the differently abled folks, whatever you will?
And I've just had a thing that goes clear up to the mayor where they say incidental being pelted with rocks from leaf blowers is not an assault. And I disagree vehemently, and I'm gonna take that to the higher courts also, because to me that it's not. If 10 people walk down the sidewalk and there's a leaf blower, every one of them's going to be assaulted, not just one or two.
Yeah, often I find, you know, when I come up to a leaf blower, they kind of courteously turn it off. But you know, I guess you might have had different experience, right?
Well, if you have lung problems and they're shooting dirt from one way to another. It's an assault, and if the dirt gets in your eyes, or if you're alert, you know, it's like an assault, and oftentimes it's hard rocks that dent cars and do other damage.
Well, I would encourage you.
I don't see why they can't have, say, two people with a rake can do the job of one guy with a blower.
Well, I know a lot of people are concerned certainly about the noise pollution, but getting back to your case, I would encourage you, as I think I've talked to you about it on the phone, you know, make a written request to your public pretender. Defender, whatever,
yeah.
That she give you an entire copy of your file, including a copy
transcripts,
of,
yeah.
Including not the transcripts. Transcripts is not in your file, but everything, you know, the transcripts. Yet you have to order separately.
Well, I caught the judge in a lie, and I need that transcript because he said I could have a choice of 12, and then he says no, this is what.
Well,
you
actually can get a transcript yourself, you know, by requesting it, or actually got to pay for it. You don't really want a transcript; you really want to get the cheaper. You're allowed to get a DVD, not a DVD, but a CD of the audio portion of the court hearing, and you can.
Right.
You, that's not that. I think that's $10 or $15 or $20 for that kind of a disc.
And they're too cheap to hire a court reporter.
And you know now they've in a way it's better because at least the whole thing is on is on
or so
is
they
on
say.
CD. Or,
why can't they can audit a tape a lot easier than they can audit? They can't.
You mean edit a tape, right?
Yeah, edit a tape. Then they can't.
Again, my advice to you, Warren, is to get a copy of the file, and the way to do that again is to make a written request and make sure you get a time or a date stamped copy of the written request from the office of that you give it to.
Right.
To clarify that you're trying to get it. And if she refuses to give it to you, well, then that's her choice. And then you have a record that she didn't do that.
I'll probably just give it to her boss.
But just make sure that you keep a record of every request you make and document what you do.
Right.
And that then later can be used to show to another judge somewhere down the line. Not that any judge is going to be any better than any other, but you never can tell. You know, sometimes they get embarrassed and they have to cover their butts. So anyway, we've been talking with Warren West, who was accused of battery, which is unlawful touching. We're talking about, and I'm not going to go into the details, but you yourself feel you were initially assaulted by a third party, and that this other party you had nothing to do with has claimed that you battered him, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that, okay. And I know that you're reluctant to talk about it prior to court, so I'm not going to go into it further.
There is no – I'm just waiting to do my competency because this is a smokescreen. This is a –
Right.
This is violation of my civil rights.
Well, don't wait to do your competency. Try to do what Jason. Warren, hang on. I'm going to interrupt you here.
Okay.
Try to do what Jason Pascal did, which is to get another lawyer to pressure the judge to disqualify himself from the case. If he is requiring you to have a competency hearing or to cop a plea, that's illegitimate. And wrong, and can't. I mean, maybe he's saying he thinks you're incompetent. Period. Whether to cop a plea, that wouldn't be wrong. I mean, the judge can think, okay, you're incompetent. But if the judge says you take the plea I want, or I'll give you a competency hearing, that is an attempt to punish you for asserting your rights to want to go to trial.
Right.
And that we were able to stop Kelly from doing, if I understand, and if the facts have properly been brought to me by Jason Pascal. So get in touch with him, and we've talked about how you can do that, and maybe you'll find you get a similar solution.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do, Robert.
All right. Well, I appreciate your calling in. Anything you want to say in conclusion, or?
I say God bless you and the listeners. We got to make Santa Cruz a better government than what we got.
Well,
that's my wish.
I agree with that. Yeah. Thank you, man.
God bless.
Hey, Warren. That was Warren West, who looks like he's getting the bum's rush from retired Judge Tom Kelly, who I watched on Department 2 yesterday right before the Huff meeting. Huff meets every Wednesday, in case you're interested, 9:30 to 11:30 usually, almost invariably. And we're in the basement of the county building in the cafeteria. And as the weather gets warmer, we blossom out to the upstairs area near the coffee cart between the county building and the courthouse. You're tuned to Free Radio. It's 101.1 FM, in case you haven't looked at your dial lately. And it's also www.freakradio.org. That's the website to go to if you want to perhaps join the Free Radio Collective. You want to have your own show. You want to donate some money. You want to kick down some equipment. You want to file a complaint. You want to send a great show commendation. You can go to that website and get in touch with us that way, freakradio.org. You can also call us at the voicemail at 427-4523, 427-4523. And you can also call me off air if you want to make some derogatory or complimentary comments about the show. You can, 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. Online, or I should say on the air, you can reach me now if you want to call in. 427-3772. 427-FRSC is the phone number to call. And phone lines are open for all of you who are just about to, do some dialing. And while you think about that, here's a little more Carol Denny. Thank you. And that was Raised to Be a Lady by Carol Denny, again, from The Cruel Lullaby. Well, I often bring along a whole bunch of newspaper clippings and never get to them, but today, since I don't have a lot of audio with me, in fact, virtually nothing to speak of, I may actually begin to get to some of these clippings and give you folks out there a chance to call in. Other stations have been talking about the LBAM update, the light brown apple moth checkmate being put on hold by the local court. I don't have all the details on that, but it's being covered by other news media, and hopefully I'm sure it'll be front page Sentinel stuff tomorrow, and it's not something that I need to cover in detail. Obviously, I'm no supporter of LBAM spraying. I particularly, however, focused on how resistant even those who oppose it are to including homeless people under the under any protective umbrella. And I've talked about how Tony Madrigal, who was out there with the, you know, the gauze masks and the petitions, when asked to make sure that the homeless were protected in November from the spraying by having a place for them to go, maybe even under the underground garages for a few hours, you know, where it would be illegal for them under the new Coonerty parking garage paranoia law, that he had no interest in doing any such thing. He never brought it up. He continued to resist any suggestions, and no one on the council has done that either. Activists who are opposing LBAM have been sympathetic, but they don't want to antagonize their allies on the city council. And that I can understand, but the fact of the matter is homeless people are more vulnerable than anybody in this town to spraying, and the idea that people who are so very concerned about it but don't want to set up places for homeless people to go in the bad event that this occurs and didn't want to set up places to go in the when it did occur back in November is quite telling to me. And I'm really talking about the politicians who are making hay off this issue, or who are, you know, raising the roof with it, and should be raising the roof with it in terms of seeking lawsuits and seeking legislative activity from Laird, our assembly person, and so forth, which is, you know, I mean, nothing wrong with doing that. But it's all very well to beat the drums to get somebody else to do something, but where you have the power and don't act to protect those at least you could protect, it shows quite tellingly that you're interest is somewhat limited or is skewed to a certain group. So that was my position on LBAM, and that's what I went after. I interviewed Madrigal about it repeatedly. He continued to try to draw me off to the side and glad hand me and pat me on the shoulder and all that kind of stuff. Don't go for that kind of shit, particularly when you just keep ducking the issue. But again, the whole issue may be moot because at least, I believe, from what I heard on the Pacific Grove radio station, which is at the far end of the dial, I can never remember the name of that station, but the what was said was that they're apparently going to be requiring an environmental review, an EIR, and so there may be at least a delay, although maybe a federal preemption of the spring, and that's going to put things forward somewhat, give us a little more opportunity. Here's a story from about a week ago in the San Francisco Chronicle. It's actually out of Miami. It's an AP story, Mistrial in Liberty City Terror Case. And this is the case of second trial of six men accused of plotting attacks on Chicago's Sears Tower and FBI offices, ended with a second hung jury. With an embarrassing blow to the case, the Bush administration had cited as an example of nipping a devastating terrorist attack in the bud. This is a deadlock after 13 days of deliberation of the so-called Liberty City 7. There was an earlier trial in December with a hung jury for the same six defendants, where a hung jury means they couldn't decide. You have to decide unanimously, or it may be in Florida that they only need 9 out of 12. Some states don't require unanimous decisions. California does. And I think Florida may too, because it doesn't mention in this article that they don't, and it probably would if they did. In any case, the government's spending huge amounts of money, not mentioned in this story, to try this group of people for, a terrorist attack. Even Matthew Orwig, former U.S. attorney in Texas who served on the Justice Department Terrorism and National Security Panel, says, there's no way to spin this other than to say that this is another stunning defeat for the government. These seven guys, I think they're all men, were arrested in a June 2006 operation with no evidence that the group ever acquired explosives or took concrete steps toward staging attacks on the Sears Tower and FBI offices, but they did have a handgun and a few machetes, okay? The case was built on hundreds of FBI audio and video recordings and the testimony of two paid FBI snitches, one of whom posed as an Al-Qaeda operative sent from overseas to help the group put together its plan. I'm reading from the AP story in the San Francisco Chronicle. The group's alleged ringleader, Narcile Batiste, testified he was faking interest in the plot in hopes of conning $50,000 out of the FBI informant. The six could have faced up to 70 years in prison if convicted of four conspiracy charges. See, they never actually did anything, but they conspired that they might have done something. Two people conspiring. It's the conspiracy type stuff gets very, very dicey. It's the kind of stuff used to punish people for intentions and thought crimes, and it builds up lots of, it's a nice government propaganda tool to say, look, we're doing all these wonderful things to protect the country. You know, we've invaded several countries. You know, we're spending, what is it, $10 to $14 billion a month in Iraq. But, oh dear, we can't get a conviction in a trial of 12 people. Maybe that's the reason why nobody from Guantanamo, the prison where people can't get, only recently could get attorneys and have no right to face their accusers, have no right to see the evidence against them, have no right to a trial, have no right to know what their charges are. Maybe that's why none of these men and women, I think they're mostly men, there are facing any trials. Because when they do put these people into trials, juries say either we disagree so much we can't agree or not guilty. It's not true in every case, of course. But it's hard to find anything that might in any way justify this huge terror scare that everybody has been buckling under. And both candidates, all candidates, Republican, all the Democrats and Republican candidates are both truckling to, whether it's Obama or Hillary or McCain. It's all, you know, terror, terror, terror. Let's fight the war on terror. It's kind of like the war on drugs. You know, it's complete bullshit, folks. We've been had, and we are still buying this bullshit. Anyway, moving along, I guess the Santa Cruzans know that there's nothing new here. Of course, we should know that we shouldn't buy our own bullshit in the war on terror. I mean, we have the police department that wants to persuade us that it's a that there's a terrible menace to walk into a parking lot or garage at night that requires making it illegal to sit in your car for 16 minutes. Horseshit. I mean, it's simple, straight, unadulterated horse poo-poo. I mean, no question about it. They didn't present any figures that would demonstrate that. They just asserted it, and Ryan Coonerty carried the ball with it and passed it. That's, of course, the civil libertarian who teaches courses in constitutional law up at UCSC and the Cabrillo College. It's just amazing. Luckily, the Obama people saw through this and voted not to send him as a delegate. Not that Obama is a, you know, he's babbling about the war on terror himself. He wants to, you know, increase the army size and send more troops to Afghanistan and keep troops in Iraq, maybe not for 50 to 100 years, but certainly not withdraw them the way they need to be withdrawn, including the Blackwater troops. He wants, you know, the permanent military bases are still going to be staying there. In any case, getting back to the story about the Liberty City terror, it is rare for federal prosecutors to lose at all with a conviction rate of over 90% across the country. I don't know if that's true, but that's chilling if that's the case. I'm kind of curious what the conviction rate is for our DA's office here in Santa Cruz. If anybody wants to do any research on that, I'd love to have somebody put in a Public Records Act request, let's say, to Bob Lee. Who he's our DA. I've criticized him a lot on this show and will continue to do so. He actually He will talk to you if you buttonhole him in the corridor. He's the tallest man around, generally speaking, tall guy. And he's always smiling, or often smiling. So, he talks to me. And if he'll talk to me, he'll probably talk to you. I mean, there are plenty of people that won't talk to me who will also talk to you. I mean, can't get Ryan Coonerty to talk to me or to return a phone call or to give a rational response to a question about the sleeping ban. That's just not in the cards. But Bob Lee is willing to talk, although what he has to say is often not terribly informative. I was the same day yesterday when I was in court checking out this bizarre Judge Kelly's bizarre claim that here's this guy Warren West and he's not going to let him have a jury trial until he goes through a competency hearing, which I find punitive. I think he's trying to intimidate the guy into dropping charges or into copping a plea. And because the charges won't stand up is my feeling about the case. I also noticed there was a disabled woman hobbled up to the podium when Kelly called her case yesterday and said that she'd gotten apparently a ticket by the Scotts Valley Police for marijuana, which she had on her when she was driving. She wasn't stoned, she wasn't intoxicated. There was no claim she was driving erratically. But for some reason, they found marijuana on her. Never let them search your car, folks. It's just step out of your car and lock it, or just roll up the window and lock it. Or pass your driver's license through the window. There's all kinds of ways to deal with the police when you're on the road. And they do not involve consenting to searches, because unfortunately, police are on the lookout for victims for their funding for the war on drugs. It's just sick, corrupt, vicious, evil, unconstitutional, and widespread. Yes, even in the wonderful, enlightened Santa Cruz County, it's widespread. It just goes on. Anyway, in court yesterday, this disabled woman, and she was hobbling as she walked up there. I mean, it was like her leg was some disability with her leg. She said, here's my medical marijuana card. And Judge Kelly said, aha, but you didn't have the card when you were busted with the marijuana. She said, no, I didn't. And I told her friend who was sitting next to me, did she have a letter from a doctor? And he said, yes. And I said, well, get up there and show the letter and mention it, because that's just as good as a card, even though now it's going to, cards are going to be cost three times as much due to the rising price of marijuana cards. I'm not sure if it's a statewide decision or a local decision, but it's not a good decision. It makes it harder for people to get access to medical marijuana, which they shouldn't have to play around with any way to get access to, but that's what they do. Anyway, he went up there and he told her, and she told the judge that she had a letter, and the judge said, oh, that's not good enough. You can't, a letter won't do it, you have to have a card, which of course isn't true. A letter is completely adequate. And I kind of looked at Kelly and I thought, where has this guy been? He's been in retirement. Has he been in Mississippi? Fishing? What's the deal with Tom Kelly? And I talked to Bob Lee as he came out of court, and I said, Bob, the marijuana situation. You know that if you have a letter, it's just as good as a card. Please advise Tom Kelly when you talk to him. And apparently he was talking to him about something else, that, this is the law currently in California, in case he's forgotten. Because he in essence pressured this woman to accept a guilty plea when she should have pled not guilty and had charges dismissed. They shouldn't have had to even go to a trial, but of course no jury would convict her of that. And that's what I continue to say to people. Generally, it's better if you have the time and the energy to stand up for your rights than to let them be plea bargained away by a court system that assumes you're guilty by the time you get there. These public defenders, I'm afraid, generally do. And I'd love to hear some good stories about public defenders who've done some good things. I mean, I heard good things about Kristen Carter as an Obama delegate. But when I tried to talk to her about the case of Jason Pascal, she wasn't interested in talking at the Obama rally, although she said she might get into it later. Public defenders are not very accessible. And if you have a public defender, I encourage you, bring somebody with you, get copies of everything they have so you can review it yourself if you need to. They'll say, you can't have somebody with you because it's an attorney-client relationship. It's confidential. You say, I waive confidentiality. I don't want a confidential relationship with you on this issue. It's more important that I feel secure and I have a friend with me and that we all be able to talk about this together. You know, that's the point. And, you know, there may be some complications in this. It may not be as confidential as it would be if it's just you and the public defender. But the problem is the public defenders have their own agenda. And while they are trained to try to do a job for you to help you win your case, they have rather limited parameters, limited time, and they're under pressure and heavily overloaded. So you have to watch out with public defenders. They're also prone to see you as there's a lot of class prejudice. They're prone to see you as guilty, even if they're, you know, committed to defending you as not guilty, is what I've seen recently anyway. I'm also going to try to get a hold of Craig Canada to talk with him. Craig is facing a number of charges, and I'm going to see if he's around. Let's see how he's, if we can get him on the phone here.
Hello?
Craig Canada.
Hi.
Craig, I'm calling you live on the air. Are you prepared to face the public?
I don't know. You're lucky I have any clothes on.
Well, I mean, through the radio mechanism, not so much directly. I mean, you might be a sight for sorehead eyes. I don't know. But
well,
I suppose. Well, I know that you have a case that, you know, involved, and we've discussed it on the free radio, Pizza My Heart, where you were kind of assaulted as by your account as you came out of the bathroom, right? First, someone pounded on the door there. You've been a customer there. You were treated in a pretty wretched manner, and yet when the police came, they arrested you, right?
Well, that's the gist of it, yeah.
And what are you charged with?
Battery.
Means an unlawful touching. So
yeah, they offered me disturbing the peace plea bargain, but I didn't take it.
So, did you follow the advice of that fine guy Robert Norse and demand a copy of your file and ask to come and speak to the public defender and see all the tapes and so forth and actually get some sense of what their case is against you?
We did chat. She said she had spoken to one witness, and that person is the person that is pressing charges. And by the way, do you still have that tape of the phone call that I made? Because I mentioned that to her, and she would very much like to have a tape of that phone call, if you still have it.
I probably do. Give me the exact date. Leave the message on the machine, my machine, and I will try to get back to you. And also,
I believe it was the 25th of November. I don't think I'll forget it anytime soon.
Okay. I think I may have that, and I think we may have played it on the air even.
Yeah, I think you did actually.
And if it's played on the air, it's already online. It's archived on the air, so you can go back to start reviewing the shows at www.huffsantacruz.org until you find the one that has it, and then you'll be ready to go. I know that one of the points you had with that phone call was you called in to talking about how you were being harassed, and then shortly thereafter you were arrested yourself. And I guess, did you ever get your medical marijuana back from that incident?
No, I didn't. I still haven't gotten it back. And, I still haven't gotten it back. I actually may not have had a recommendation. I was looking at that the other day, and it does look like that for those few days, let me get my file here okay, here we go. So my last one was on 11/18/06, and that was good through 11/18/07, and then the next one is 12/13/07, so there was almost
what are you talking
30
about?
30 days there.
Well, what,
and
I'm
this
sorry.
Happened during in that period.
I'm not sure. What are you talking about? You're referring to something, but I don't know what it is. You say my last one, your last what?
Recommendation.
Oh, for
written recommendation.
Oh, for marijuana. That's what you had, didn't get back? They didn't give that back to you, or?
No, Robert.
I'm
that's
sorry.
Not what it's saying.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood you.
Maybe I should hang up. No, what I'm saying is that you have to get them yearly, you know. And
yeah, I'm aware of that.
Okay, so the one that I had previous to my current one, I got on December the 13th. The previous one I got on November the 18th of 06, which was good for 12 months.
Well, what's the relevance of all this? I mean, you aren't accused of having an inappropriate medical marijuana recommendation. You're accused of battery, right?
Yes, but it was on the 25th of November, and the recommendation I had expired on the 18th. This did not come up today, but if it does, I'm sure that they're going to argue that since I didn't have a recommendation that actually I had an appointment at the time to get a recommendation, that's going to be what they're going to do is say, well, you weren't covered, and that actually violates both. It violates the spirit of 215, and it also violates the letter, actually, because 215 doesn't work.
You're assuming. I mean, let's wait until they do that before we worry about it. Because frankly, you and I both know because of what you say is true that it does violate the spirit and the letter. More important, they won't be able to find a jury to convict you of that. I mean, I don't think. I mean, it's you know, if you're bringing
finding a jury to convict me.
I'm talking about this.
Battery is one thing.
Right.
Getting my marijuana back is another.
Well, so have you requested that your marijuana be returned or?
Well, I didn't do that today, Robert. I really just wanted to get out of there.
Right.
The fact is, by now, it's pointless anyway. It's been 6 months. It's been in storage. It's ruined. They got my medicine. Actually, I got to spend the holiday, Thanksgiving, without any medicine. I know I was in jail, and then when I got out, it was too late. I remember I didn't have a sleeping bag or anything.
Well, I know we've done a lot of talking on the air about how you were harassed under the sleeping ban and outside, and you also denied facilities at different places because of the federal prohibition on marijuana use and the concerns that these local agencies had. You've been ticketed for having lighting a bowl up downtown as a medical marijuana user. Even though, you know, you were doing so for medical purposes, right?
Yeah, that's correct. One of the officers, there was three of them. One of them, Hoppy, is one of the same ones that was involved in this Pizza My Heart thing. He was sort of a silent partner in this ticketing on, it was on Pacific Avenue in front of Borders at 9 p.m. on Friday night. And I had just become housed, and I didn't have internet service, and I was going from one place where I was paying $10 to sit for a few hours so I could use the internet to another place where I intended to pay $10 so I could sit for a few hours and use the internet. And I was going to smoke a bowl on the way because it enables me to focus and concentrate. And I was told that some child might see me, and I was within 1,000 feet of a church or school or something there on Pacific Avenue, and that it was illegal, and they took my medicine. They humiliated me for a good hour. Well, it seemed like an hour. It was probably about 15 or 20 minutes, but they humiliated me, and they took my medicine. They stood there on the street. They wanted to see. They asked me if I had documentation. I pulled it out, and then they said, well, you don't have a card. Get a card, and they told me to get a card, and I said, here's. And then when I had my documentation out, they didn't want to see it, and they asked me what my condition was, and you know, I ended up telling them you're not, and they told me.
Sounds like a lot of shit there, Craig. No question about it.
Well, I'm telling them, they're not my doctor. I'm really not interested in them stopping me on the street and giving me their medical opinion, which is what they did, and taking my medicine on a Friday night. They were out here smoking. The other day, I didn't bother to go outside. I really have no desire to go outside anywhere anymore. But
then on another occasion, as I understand it, you were near the flower shop in the middle of one of the worst thunderstorms we've had, and the police stopped and forced you to go back out into the rain because you were smoking marijuana there?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was the storm of the century, storm of the decade. Yeah, in fact, I've got pictures on my blog, and I think that's still fairly recent. It's the entry called To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. I should call it Heroes of the Storm.
It would be hard to imagine that there would be children out in the storm that would be offended by your medicating en route.
There was nobody there, Robert. All the power was out. Everyone had left. There was no one. Everything was closed. I was sitting out there because there was nowhere else to go, and I was homeless. There was nowhere else to go. Everything was closed.
Now, there was a third... There's a third misdemeanor you're facing, and what was that misdemeanor?
I really can't remember what else. Peeing, that's it.
Oh,
peeing.
Right, you urinated. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, it's something I have to do when I wake up in the morning.
And that's when you were outside, you had no legal place to be, and and you were, you had to take a piss.
Street cleaners called the police on me.
Ah, yes.
And the police were going to actually let me go, and one of them, from the way the policeman talked, I had the impression that he had been told that I was basically waving it out on Pacific Street in front of God and everybody, which is not what happened. The fact was that I woke up, and I was going to pee in my pants if I didn't go right. I didn't have time to get my pack and pack everything up in my sleeping bag, and so my choice was to pee in my pants and pack my stuff up or leave my stuff there, and there was no choice.
And
but
risk
anyway,
theft, yeah. So these citations are coming to you. Don't, make sure you deal with them so you don't get a failure to appear, and keep us advised. For those who do have these kinds of tickets, you can come to the Huff meeting or the Human Rights Organization, which meets every Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Firefly Cafe at 131 Front Street. About a block or two from the Saturn Cafe. Talking with Craig Canada. Craig, you're now indoors. Is it better?
It's much better. It's not a home. It's a room. But it's definitely better than being outdoors. I know it's been cold lately. It even looked like it was raining the other night. I don't really spend a lot of time finding out if it's going to be raining anymore. I don't have these big boils that come up on my thighs because I can't bathe, and that come up and get painful and then burst and ooze.
So you now have bathroom facilities, shower facilities, privacy, an opportunity to medicate when you need to. Are you now? Have you been discouraged now from medicating outside on Pacific Avenue? Or are you now? You haven't done that since the bust in front of Borders, or?
It's not just medicating, Robert. I really don't want to be outdoors in this town.
No, but I mean, once you're outdoors, do you ever? I don't see you outside much. It's true.
I've been discouraged from going anywhere or doing anything. I really don't want to go outdoors. I really don't want to sit outside. I really don't want to be outside. I really don't want anything to do with anybody. I really don't want to see anybody. After being out on your damn streets for 2 years. Being a punching bag for everybody with a bad attitude and axe to grind that comes along, I really don't want. I want to be alone.
Oh, Greta Garbo it up for me there, Craig. I can take it.
Listen, yes, I want to be alone.
Anyway, thank you, and please keep us advised as to what's happening because, it's more amusing now that you're indoors than you're out, that's for sure.
They all seem like very, very, very little people to me most of the time now, but it does kind of irritate me to talk about it.
Thanks, Craig, and thanks for letting us hear the whole story, or at least some of it, on Free Radio.
Well, yeah, thanks for calling. And the fact is that if you and other people didn't prod me every now and then to do something, I would probably just sit here and hope it all goes away.
Well,
but I know better.
Probably won't go away, but hey. Thanks for talking.
Uh-huh.
Take care.
Bye.
And that was Craig Canada. He has a blog, Palm Springs Bum, I believe it's .com, might be .org. He's a very articulate guy into genealogy, particularly strong on Information around medical marijuana, where he's been fighting a struggle for years around that issue. I focus on his experiences as a homeless person, his tangles with the court, because we kind of been talking about that for the last hour for around a number of folks. But his expertise is in marijuana, and he's written a lot about it. Check it out. Again, Palm Springs Bum. Look for that. Just Google for Palm Springs Bum, and you'll get to his website. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Robert, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Let's hear a little more from Carol Denny. That's actually an old one, again, from Carol Denny, from the collection The Cruel Lullaby, actually. Cruel Lullaby came out in 2003, but these songs, some of them are some years older. Carol Denny is not just a singer, songwriter, and activist in Berkeley, but she was a mainstay of Free Radio Berkeley. She was the first of the second or the current wave of free radio stations to come on the air. Compliments of that wizard of the airwaves, Stephen Dunifer, who helped create these cheap radio kits, which allowed free radio to spread to not only throughout the United States, but through third world countries where people are actually getting shot dead, like in Oaxaca or in other places. Or I'm thinking it's either Oaxaca or other provinces in other states in Mexico. Really important means of communication. I think it's been significant in Santa Cruz to allow people who don't have the chance to speak, giving them the chance to speak. People like Mr. West, Mr. Canada, all these guys don't have an opportunity. If you want to catch the other side, if you're interested in knowing some dirt on Robert Norris and Becky Johnson. Becky Johnson's a writer as well as a TV journalist, and she's been involved with HUF as I have, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for over a decade. There's a Sentinel poll. Actually, it's a Sentinel Forum poll, which actually is a complete trashing session of me and Becky. If you want to check it out, you can. I don't even know why I mentioned it, except it came in as an email just recently, a few moments ago, and I thought I'd mention it. It's kind of a goof. What else is happening? Well, there's some ongoing, just sort of some updates. Donna Dice, you may remember, is the woman who lives in her vehicle. She previously worked with the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. In fact, she co-founded it and helped many, many people fight their evictions and become aware of their rights as tenants. She herself was evicted finally, and she's been living in her vehicle. She's been fighting harassment by Ranger Wallace in bogus tickets that were issued to her last August, in which the ranger had apparently inappropriately put up signs that said you can't, no RVs in the Lighthouse Field parking lots, the four parking lots A, B, C, and D near the Lighthouse Field. The state realized that was wrong and went around and painted all those over. Did Wallace apologize and drop the charges and try to make amends? No, he went to court and continued to prosecute Donna Dice, and that case is still kind of winding its way forward. We may get an update on that on Sunday, when I'm hoping to have in the studio John Golder, who is or Jond Golder by his Norwegian name. He's a guy you've heard from on Free Radio here on my show considerable amount, concerned with a lot of the other issues he's concerned with aren't my issues, but he is concerned with people's rights. For example, he showed up in the parking lot next to the farmer's market when the cops were trying to drive away the drum circle, and he brought with him a huge Don't Tread on Me flag. In fact, he held it over the window where Officer Aldrich was trying to do some snitch informant filming. I guess I wouldn't call it informant. You'd call it political surveillance of the parking lot by videoing people engaging in some of them in lawful activity, which is walking through the parking lot. Others engaging in unlawful activity, which is actually it is lawful activity. It's the law itself is unconstitutional, but activity that violates the code section, which says you can't sit down with friends around the tree in the parking lot and talk or play music or share food, which is what we've done, of course, for years and will continue to do and have continued to do in spite of the interference and edicts of Mayor Coonerty, the Santa Cruz City Council, Officer Aldrich, and Officer Klein, other folks involved with the policing of the area and keeping our parking lots safe and hippie-free. Or so it would seem, which is what they were trying to do in this instance. Donna Dice is again being harassed, according to this email, this time by the state rangers. She received a citation from the state rangers. Now they're trying to claim that her Her van sticks out too far, not parking within the space, and she's trying to fight that. It's a continual war here to deal with the most kind of elementary issues, which is if you have a vehicle and you live in your vehicle, there have to be legal places for you to go, and the city is trying to make this increasingly difficult. I don't have a lot of the details of this case because I want to talk to her about it. Maybe she can come on the air and talk about it. She has in the past. She has written about it. Again, if you go to Santa Cruz Indy Bay, Google for Santa Cruz, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, Indy Bay, and then look up, look on the search function for Donna Deiss, D-E-I-S-S. You'll find some of the stuff she's written, articulate stories about her struggle to be left alone by the authorities, to be able to simply live and enjoy the ordinary things which many of us take for granted, but which authorities have decided is the basis for trying to drive her and others away. Well, I was talking before about this article about the Liberty City, quote, terror case, which resulted in a hung jury, a mistrial, after 13 days of deliberation and probably more than $100,000 in expenses. And I'm again looking for somebody who's interested in doing some research, all you listeners out there who, you know, would like to contribute but not, don't have a lot of time. Listen in on Sunday to the Public Records Act request kind of workshop forum broadcast that John Golder does. He's scheduled to do it from 10 to 11. I'll try to put that on Indy Bay. But it would be nice to get from Bob Lee, and I guess I went off on a riff on Bob Lee, our own prosecutor, what the conviction rate is in Santa Cruz. I'd also kind of like to know what the rate for our police department for solving crimes. How many crimes are unsolved in each category? What percentage do we get solved? How efficient is our police department in doing that? And, you know, it's not just because I want to rag on the police department, but I really, police department has an untoward amount of respect, I think, because people are conditioned to believe that the police are our friends and helpful and so forth, and also partially because who wants the humiliation of feeling you're living in fear? It would be much better to believe you're living under a wise and thoughtful father or mother who has a lot of authority and lethal force to boot, and they're protecting you. I mean, it's much nicer to believe that than to believe that you just have to watch out for these guys these men and women in blue uniforms, because you know, not only can they fine you and jail you, they can shoot you dead. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I'm trying to reach Robert Norris.
I think that Mr. Norris is has retired, but I've taken his place. And no, in fact, I am Robert Norris.
Yes, I thought so. This is David Bush, Robert Norris.
David Bush. Well, you know, David, I'm glad you called because of an oversight on my part, one of a long string of oversights. I haven't brought your tape along. We did a long interview yesterday on the fate of the New Hope City, the 10th city in Ontario, California, and you are, in fact, down there in the very thick of the 10th city, right?
Yeah, but I guess the tape got left behind.
The tape got left behind, but the person is calling in on the line. So David Bush, and I call you Bush, not Bush, because I know that we must distinguish between the Bushes and the Bushes, you know.
I started thinking about it a few years ago. You have to walk around with this name, considering all the murders and things that were being committed in that name. I just said, ooh.
Well, also, you're spelled B-U-S-C-H, whereas he is B-U-S-H.
Yeah, distantly related, but have to deal with it. But
David, you're an activist, though. You showed up at the 10th city. I'm rushing you because I haven't got a lot of time here left. I want to use whatever I can.
Oh, yeah. Been out at the 10th city for about a month and a half. I've been homeless for 15 years.
Uh-huh.
And my homelessness actually started in Ontario back in 1992 when our family business failed. I was living in our family's warehouse to help keep our business afloat. We were big distributors. And so found myself back here 15 years later because they're arresting homeless people for the, not as usual,
Now, Ontario, Canada is about the size of Santa Cruz or a million people? How large is this dump anyway?
And Ontario, Canada is huge.
I don't mean Ontario,
Ontario,
Canada.
California.
Yeah, that's it.
Is
California.
About 40,000 people.
How many people?
And right next to their international airport, which is a big distribution hub for some of the biggest corporations on the planet,
right.
Sony, Toyota, and the others. Homeless found an abandoned field and started setting up a community, got tired of waiting for government to do it, and got tired of being pushed around and decided to start taking a stand, and it swelled up to about 400 people about a month ago. They cut it down to 200 and said, well, it was kind of a brave thing. The city of Ontario said that from here on out, if you were a resident of Ontario and you became homeless, and you called the county and they couldn't shelter you, that at least the city of Ontario that you were resident in was going to at least, if they couldn't give you shelter or affordable housing, give you a tent and a field to camp in.
I mean, they actually, the city of Ontario gave out tents to people who requested them who were homeless?
Some local charities came and pitched in and with the city's help and supervision gave away a bunch of free tents.
And they also set up porta potties and some.
Uh-huh.
And were there shower facilities and wash basins? And
well, the rudiments. I mean, a cold shower, one cold shower for 200 people, running off of a faucet, and about a dozen porta potties. And the rest of the community came around and was pitching in firewood and things to eat, and it was going really pretty well, just with community effort and. But the fact is the city, kind of left people hanging, didn't let them know as it got bigger and more well-known whether they'd be allowed to stay or not. And people kind of like were living day by day wondering when the police would come crashing in. And the city, when they did step in, turned out to say, well, we're going to fence it in, we're going to give you a bunch of regulations, and half of you got to go. So, it's good that a city would recognize this and a city would step in and say, hey, we're going to give you some official recognition, but it's bad in the sense that a lot of people have had to go. So we've been teaching the county of San Bernardino to do the next logical step, which is take the Ontario camp.
So I know that you and a sort of a small group of folks have been organizing in the hopes of marching on the county seat. What is the county seat of San Bernardino? Is it Ontario, California?
No, it's actually the city of San Bernardino. Uh-huh. It's about 25 miles from where we're at, and we're hanging on for as long as we can. We're still trying to get the city of Ontario to just tell some homeless folks that they don't have to abandon their animals to get a tent in an empty field. And we are trying to stand by those folks because about half the folks who are homeless out here, they have a dog or a cat that they've kept with them for years, and the city is now asking them to part with that animal just so that they'll have a tent for 90 days. And people are saying that kind of defeats the purpose, to giving people a home. And the irony was that they started asking folks to do this on Earth Day, of all days, to ask people to abandon their animals. So we've been standing with them. We're trying to get the city to negotiate. We're trying to get the county of San Bernardino to come out and meet with us officially and tell us what could be done. And since they're not coming out to us, it looks like maybe in a few days we might be having to march out onto Route 66, which is about a mile from us. The great mother road of America, actually, is about a mile from the tent city. And we're going to have to march down that Route 66 like all migrants have done since the Great Depression looking for a home, and march on the county of San Bernardino and ask them to step up to the plate.
So, originally this city formed, this tent city formed in July. I thought it was formed because the cops decided they wanted to move people away from scattered areas into one relatively isolated area. I mean, this is pretty, how far away is this tent city from the downtown Ontario?
Well, not too far from the downtown, but it's actually right next to the airport. It's right under a flight path, and it's right next to a set of railroads. And it was two cops that forward and said that they were going to not criminalize the homeless folks that were over there and kind of had had a hand in help directing them over there. And you got to give those two officers some credit when the when the elected officials fail. You know, I guess maybe they, you know, it's very brave of them and very humane of them. I wish more cops would say, "I'm tired of ticketing homeless people."
You mean they actually came out? They came out publicly and said that?
Well, no, you know, I mean, I don't even think their names have been released. You know, I mean, the way it's turned out here from the folks who were here from the beginning, as they tell us that it happened to them when they were out here. You know, nobody really planned it. Everybody had a little bit of a hand in it. And it kind of, you know, and these two cops were very helpful in setting it up when the city officials were standing around doing nothing.
Now, so previously, although you may not know the details, I mean, is there some sort of a kind of a, Santa Cruz has a sleeping ban and a camping ban. Does Ontario have a similar law that homeless people were being ticketed under? Or?
Oh, yeah, you know, ticketed for sleeping on the sidewalk, ticketed for being in alleys. Ticketed, you know, for standing on the sidewalk and the so-called loitering.
So those tickets are still being given out, right?
Yeah, around the downtown, you know.
Was there a specific kind of level of ticketing of people for sleeping at night that has dropped because of the existence of the tent city from July of last year to this year?
You know, that's a really interesting question. Somebody should call up the Ontario city officials and say, you know, you're spending a lot of police time on that in the past. Can you show by the drop in tickets that you've actually saved the city a ton of money by freeing up police officers to do more important things?
And also, I guess the reason, I mean, Ontario instituted this armband system. The city bureaucrats said, we're going to come into this, the New Hope City, as the tent city is called, as I understand it, and say, mm-hmm. you know, we'll give you three different colored armbands. Those of you who have your birth certificates on you get the best armband. The second class is if you might have it, and the third is if you're an outside agitator and you just showed up. Was there any particular crime problem or drug problem? I always hate that. Or, I mean, was there any showing by the police or by the city that there needed to be some kind of draconian control measures and some triaging, some eliminating, excluding of people from New Hope City?
No, I mean, there were two incidents in 7 months. One where a woman was attacked and the police were immediately called and the guy was hauled off to jail, and another one, a fight where a guy pulled out a knife and cut a fellow, not even seriously. You know, the crime level was really low. You know, and it's amazing considering, you know, there was no representative from a city out there saying, come to us when you got problems. There was no, there was nobody out there saying, we'll help you organize a community patrol or anything like that. It was really folks who had no place to go, very scared and very frightened, didn't know really if the whole thing would not have been closed up by the city at any moment now for about 7 months until they announced about a month and a half ago that they were going to step in and officially recognize it. And it's been sort of a mixed blessing in that respect, because it is nice to have a city officially recognize, you know, that they need to decriminalize homeless people. But in a sense, they're now moving in an opposite direction. It's becoming a little bit, instead of like New Hope City, it's becoming more and more a lot of homeless fear like New Hope Prison. I mean, we need other cities. We need counties. Look, if you cannot affordably house people, if politicians are continually going to dawdle, they're going to continually shovel cash to corporate welfare and banks, and the war, and they're going to dawdle on affordable housing and on even shelters. You know, they need to, more of them need to open up these tent cities. They need to do, in that respect, they need to follow Ontario's example. In the other respect of just, you know, leaving people hanging for months and months on whether they could be arrested any moment or not, and not giving them any direction or any support in any way or another, that it shouldn't be done that way. And now this idea of throwing up barbed wire fences and doing morning counts and all of these kind of things, locking the gates at night, that it certainly doesn't need to be emulated. So there's a lot of mixed blessings.
It tends to go also against the. I know there's a big discussion in Fresno. I talked to you about Mike Rhodes earlier, who I was going to introduce you to as an activist there. The 10-year plan to, end homelessness, that the Bush administration has put out, has been using this thing called Housing First, which might be. Are you still there, David? I think we lost you. David? Okay. That's David Bush. As you can tell, he's well-spoken, he's experienced, he's articulate, and really most important, he's on the front lines. He doesn't mind going, setting up a tent. He's been homeless himself for 15 years, and he's not ashamed of it because he believes in what he does, which has to do with publicizing the links between homelessness, world poverty. He was going to talk actually about the peak food, as it's called, the fact that they're rationing rice in the U.S. He's going to talk about the significance of tent cities now being closer to urban areas than ever before, as in Ontario, unlike in, we've had a tent city in Santa Cruz, and there's been a tent city in Isla Vista, and there was a tent city in Los Angeles 20 years ago, but this is a long-lived tent city in Ontario, California. He also is... fought some significant legal battles with the city of Los Angeles and established some rights for poor people. And I'm hoping we can have him back on Sunday when, he also will be able to kind of give us the update on what's going on in Ontario. I'm going to go out on a song from Carol Denny's newest album. I think it's her newest album. You're Spending Too Much Money on Your Hair. Again, her website is www.caroldenny.com, and Denny is spelled D-E-N-N-E-Y, not D-E-N-N-Y. And this song is about a homeless man who was murdered in jail named Kevin Freeman. Talk to you again on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning, if you want to check out that particular show. And you can also give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF. Coming up next after the show, From the Cream to the Dregs. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
The world isn't made up of atoms, you know. It's made up of stories and songs about all of the people who did their small best to tell all of the rights from the wrong. Kevin was someone who'd played all his cards, and his world kept on coming apart. He smiled like a star through a forest and sky at the putrid look in his heart. Down near the bay where it's foggy all day, the stars are much harder to see. And it takes all your heart just to play a small part in the story. Town with a certain renown, and it's proud of its liberal ways. But if you are poor, who will show you the door, or just slam the door right in your face? Kevin, they figured they'd just throw in jail again and again and again, with a stay-away order that meant half the town was forbidden the half with his friends. Just to play a small part in the story. The old days they'd shanghai a man who would awaken and find himself sailing away. These days they just outlaw everything so they can pick and choose. Sell. once attacked cellmates before. Kevin's life ended by angry bare hands on the lawn and his cell on the floor. Down near the bay where it's foggy all day, the stars are much harder to see. And it takes all your heart just to play a small part in the story. Town that the rest of the world always thinks is ahead of the game. But Kevin could tell you a story or two, and there's plenty gets treated the same. Officials who vie for the spotlight will tell you they're sorry the way it went down. But Kevin was cost all the living, and it's still going round. Down near the bay where it's foggy all day, the stars are much harder to see. And it takes all your heart just to play a small part in the story. Down near the bay where it's foggy all day, the stars are much harder to see. And it takes all your heart just to play a small part in the story.
Cause we on. The nurses all gathered round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, "Leave this one alone." She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad. 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 Bad to the bone. I broke 1,000 hearts before I met you. I'll break 1,000 more, baby, before I am through. I wanna be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad. 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 Rich woman beg, and I make a good woman steal. I make an old woman blush, and I make a young girl squeal. I wanna be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone. Bad. Bad. Bad.
Singing all these pretty songs, you see. All right, so if you don't mind, me and the fellas feel like getting dirty one time. Look out, baby. So,
rock and roll show, having nothing but fun, and we reel. Reeling and rocking. Reeling and rocking, working by the break of dawn. Looked at my watch and it was almost two. Nothing I'd rather do than rock with you, and we reel. Break of dawn. I looked at my watch, it was a little past three. I was digging her and she was digging me, and we reeled. Reeling and rocking, child, till the break of dawn. I looked at my watch, it was almost four. She said, Lonesome George, let's do it some more. Woo!